the authorship and date, which will include a rather brief survey of critical approaches to the book. The book of Deuteronomy is a book that has received an enormous amount of discussion as far as its authorship and its date. Probably more so than any of the other books of the Pentateuch, perhaps more so than any other book in the Old Testament. And of course, that's a very important matter in understanding the significance of the book. So authorship and date we'll consider. Secondly, the literary structure and scope of the book. The literary structure of the book relates to some of the critical questions, but I think we ought to consider it as a subject in itself, because its structure and its scope, I think, has a lot to say about its interpretation, its meaning, its significance, particularly as you are aware from Old Testament history last year, the relation of the ancient Near Eastern treaties and their structure to the book of Deuteronomy, what implications that may have for the concept of the book as in fine words of the title of his commentary in Deuteronomy being the treaty of the great king, as Yahweh entered into covenant with his people, and what the nature of that covenant was, what implications then that literary structure has for understanding the nature of the book. Thirdly, exegetical studies of selected passages. I wanted to come back and discuss that later. Really, I'd like to spend a large proportion of the time of the course on exegetical discussion. And I'm sure we will do that. Fourthly, influence on prophetic writings and on the so-called deuteronomistic history. I think we ought to look into that, at least to some degree. What is the influence of the book of Deuteronomy on subsequent parts of the Old Testament? How has the book of Deuteronomy influenced prophetic preaching? How has it influenced the historical books that frequently are given this label of deuteronomistic history writing? And again, we're back into critical questions with that. But I think there's also something of significance there for understanding the nature of the historical books in the Old Testament. So those four things, authorship and date, literary structure, exegetical studies, influence on subsequent Old Testament literature, are things we want to look at during the semester. First, some general remarks on the state of affairs in relation to literary criticism of the Old Testament. I think that it's certainly a valid generalization that after a century of debate on the JEDP hypothesis, formulated by Wellhausen about a century ago in its classic form, that his basic position remains a widely accepted and very influential theory on the origin and nature of the Pentateuch. And in spite of certain generally accepted modifications and adjustments of various details of the theory, the basic theory still remains pretty much intact in the world of Old Testament scholarship as far as the leading scholarly organizations are concerned, publications, societies, that sort of thing. Typical of current opinion is that expressed by Gerald A. LaRue, L-A-R-U-E, in his book Old Testament Life and Literature, 1968, where he says, quote, "Most present-day scholarship accepts the basic premises of the documentary hypothesis, namely, that different source materials are to be found, that the labels J, E, D, and P are acceptable for major sources, and that the order of development is that proposed in the Graf Wellhausen thesis." Now, this is 1968, that's not too long ago, and in LaRue's opinion, those basic premises are still accepted today. There are different sources. Those sources are best labeled J, E, D, and P, and that the order of those sources, as far as the time of their composition, J early, E later, D a bit later, P the last, the latest, is the order that is still to be regarded as the correct one, and that was, of course, proposed by Graf and Wellhausen. Was there a question here? Now, LaRue goes on to say that the acceptance of this theory is a basic assumption for his treatment of Pentateuchal literature. When he comes to the Pentateuch, he starts on that assumption, that that framework or structure that Wellhausen set up is the way that you approach the literature. I think you have to say that that's an admirable admission if somebody's going to do that, because all too often there's no recognition at all that you're starting on that assumption and that JDP is simply a theory. You pick up many handbooks today, it's not presented as any theory or any assumption, it's presented as established fact, and you start on that basis of that established fact. LaRue says, because the documentary hypothesis is the most widely accepted of all the theories of Pentateuchal analysis, this book will utilize in principle the conclusions reached by this method of research. And then he reminds the reader that this documentary hypothesis is nothing more than a hypothesis, a proposition assumed to explain certain facts, the theory assumed to explain certain alleged problems in the Old Testament. You adopt the conclusions of that approach and you start on that, and then you analyze the Old Testament literature on the basis of accepting the theory. Now, frequently it's said that Wellhausen's become outdated, that there's been a lot of changes in Old Testament scholarship since his time. There's been a move back toward acceptance of the Old Testament much more as it claims to be, as a reliable piece of literature which regards the history of ancient Israel and so forth. There is something to that. There are certainly some of the radical edges of the Wellhausen theory have been knocked off a bit, but basically the structure remains intact. Now, I'm leading up to something with all this, and that's the critical role that Deuteronomy plays in this whole JDP thing, because it is the cornerstone of it. But I think we need some background introduction before we get to that. R.J. Thompson, that's a different Thompson than this J.A. Thompson. R.J. Thompson wrote a book called Moses and the Law in a Century of Criticism Since Graf. Moses and the Law in a Century of Criticism Since Graf, G-R-A-F. Graf was a predecessor of Wellhausen. Wellhausen built on some of Graf's work prior to his time, Wellhausen's time. Thompson wrote in 1970 in this book, Moses and the Law in the Century of Criticism Since Graf. It's a supplement to Vetus Testamentum. Vetus Testamentum, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, is probably one of the two outstanding technical journals in Old Testament studies, Vetus Testamentum being the one. The other often referred to as ZAW, Zeitschrift for Alt Testamentis Wissenschaft, which is Journal for Old Testament Academic Studies. Both of them are in the library. But Vetus Testamentum, which is a journal, comes out, it's a quarterly journal. You might look at it from time to time in the library. Publishes supplements from time to time. This is supplement number 19. It's a book. But they're technical monographs on various subjects of interest to Old Testament scholars. And this one was on Moses and the Law and sort of a history of criticism since Wellhausen up to the present, 1970. Page 163, he says this. In 1965, then, a century after its publication, the Graphian hypothesis is still favored by the majority of scholars. Prophecies of its demise by Orr in 1905, Stace in 1910, Neubauer in 1918, DeBose in 1923, Orbach and Copens in 1938, Levy in 1947, Ginsburg in 1950, have not been fulfilled. Instead, it has turned the tables on its critics and eroded the conservative bastions in Jerusalem and Rome, and made inroads into evangelical Protestantism. Now that's Thompson's conclusion as far as the continuing influence and acceptance of the Graf, Kuhn, and Wellhausen approach to Old Testament literature in a century of time after its first advocacy by Wellhausen in its in the form which it was so influential. So that we're not dealing then with something that is of no contemporary importance or interest, something that's outdated when we say that the Wellhausen theories are still something that have to be dealt with. In recent years, many commentaries have been written designed to aid the laity in teaching the Bible, which have adopted the Wellhausen theory as a basis for their interpretation of the Old Testament. Now, all you have to do is go up to the library and pick up, like, the Layman's Bible Commentaries of the John Knox Press, Richmond, Virginia. And you see that they adopt as a starting point acceptance of the Wellhausen theory. The Torch Bible Commentaries, SCM Press in London. The Westminster Guides, Westminster Press, Philadelphia. Bible Guides, Abington Press, Nashville. Now those are popular commentaries designed to help people teach Sunday school class. But they adopt as a starting point the Wellhausen position. Adherence to the Wellhausen position is also to be found in textbooks used in courses in religion and religious literature given at colleges and universities across the country. Probably some of you have seen that, maybe taken a course where the religious literature of the Bible is treated and the textbook adopts the Wellhausen theory. For example, Understanding the Old Testament, B.W. Anderson. It's a very common text used in those courses. A Light to the Nations by Norman Gottwald, G-O-T-T-W-A-L-D. I could mention a number of others. But the point is that many university campuses, the Wellhausen theory is presented today, both in lecture and in textbook, as being the only way to approach the literature of the Old Testament. I think what's so misleading about these study guides and textbooks is that there this theory is presented as fact, and it's something that's established and irrefutable. And if someone is not initiated into the vast literature of Old Testament scholarship over the last century and aware of all the debate that's going on over this, a person's unable, really, to cope very well with a lot of the arguments that are presented. and unaware that many features of the theory have been challenged and disputed, even among the critical scholars themselves. You get a lot of crossfire, even between these critical scholars, attacking each other on various facets of their position. So unanimity is something which is found in survey books, but hardly in the technical literature. You get into the technical literature, you get into just an unbelievable tangle of arguments back and forth on all kinds of details of these theories. In this whole discussion around J, D, and P, Deuteronomy is of central significance. And the interesting thing is that in the last few years, there have been some exciting developments in the study of Deuteronomy that relate rather directly to this whole problem, and particularly to the question of the Mosaic authorship of the Pentateuch. So it'll be our purpose to gain some insight in this discussion of authorship and date into the question of why the dating of Deuteronomy is so crucial to the whole JDP theory. And to learn something of some of the more recent developments in regard to the authorship and date of Deuteronomy that really provide some new weapons to be used against the Wellhausen position. Now, as far then as the authorship and date of Deuteronomy are concerned, first of all, the theory of the Wellhausen school. What is it? Just by way of a brief comment, as far as background, the book of Deuteronomy, according to its own witness, is of Mosaic origin. As you go through the book, it clearly represents itself to be material that was presented by Moses, the people of Israel gathered in the plains of Moab prior to the entrance into the Promised Land. And both Jews and Christians have held it to be Mosaic all through the years, until the beginning of the 19th century. So it's rather recent development historically for the Mosaic origin of Deuteronomy to be questioned. In 1805 and 1806, a man named Devet, that's D-E, capital W-E-T-T-E, advanced the view, Devet, D-E-W-E-T-T-E, 1805-1806, he advanced the view, which has become the dominant view of critical scholars, that the law book that was found in the temple, according to 2 Kings 22, during the time of Josiah, is to be identified, for the most part, with Deuteronomy. Now that in itself is not something drastically new, but it was to be identified with Deuteronomy, and here's the critical thing, that this book originated shortly before that time. Originated shortly before that time. In other words, shortly before the time of Josiah, about 621. Second Kings chapter 22. Now, Devet antedated Wellhausen. Wellhausen adopted Devet's view on Deuteronomy being the law book and originating shortly before the time of Josiah. In other words, its representation as being Mosaic. Frequently that term was used as a pious fraud. That opinion of the origin of the book, shortly before the time of Josiah, became a cornerstone of the whole JEDP theory. Now, we want to get into why that is the case to a degree. We can't discuss a lot of these questions in great detail, but we can get some idea of the line of argumentation. One aspect of the JEDP sequence, one aspect, and the force of Wellhausen's position was that he brought together a number of lines of argumentation that seemed to converge and support each other. One aspect of his line of argumentation, and the sequence JEDP, was the comparison of legal material within those documents. In other words, you compare the legal material in the J source, the E source, the D source, the P source. And the claim was made that if you compare the legal material in those sources, you can see a development. The one point that is fixed as far as a time is concerned, and that whole sequence of development, is the D document. It's basically the core of the book of Deuteronomy. That's dated, according to this theory, at 621. So the legal material that in this sequence of development would be placed prior to that, of course, would have to be prior to 621. That which would, according to the theory, show development subsequent to Deuteronomy would have to come after 621. But the point of reference becomes 2 Kings 22 and the identification of Deuteronomy with the law book and concluding that that law book originated at that time in 621. Now, in this approach, the main legal section of Deuteronomy is in chapters 12 to 26. Legal material really begins there at 12. 12 to 26 you get legal material. That's generally known as the Deuteronomic Code. So they speak of a Deuteronomic Code as to be distinguished from other codes of law that are to be found in the Pentateuch. You have the Deuteronomic Code, Deuteronomy 12 to 26. Wellhausen felt that code originated in 621, shortly before. He compared then that legal material with other groups of legal material in the Old Testament, concluding that these other groups of laws belong to different periods of time, and these periods of time were rather widely separated. The earliest of these other groups of legal material he found in the Book of the Covenant, or what's often called then the Covenant Code, Exodus chapters 20 to 23. That Covenant Code, Exodus 20 to 23, is assigned either to J or to J.E. Now, the critics have often had difficulty distinguishing between J and E, and there's a lot of dispute whether the Covenant Code is the product of J or the product of the combination of J and E, but in any case, J or J.E. In the Covenant Code of Exodus 20 to 23, there's said to be no centralization of worship. No centralization of worship. Centralization of worship, as we're going to notice, becomes a very important issue in this whole discussion. Notice Exodus 20, verse 24. An altar of earth, that's within this covenant code. An altar of earth thou shalt make unto me, shalt sacrifice thereon thy burnt offerings, thy peace offerings, thy sheep, thine oxen. Now where? In all the places where I record my name, I will come unto thee, I will bless thee. And if thou wilt make me an altar of stone, thou shalt not build it of hewn stone. For if thou lift up thy tool upon it, thou hast polluted it. Neither shalt thou go up by steps unto mine altar. Thy nakedness be not exposed thereon. But altars are to be built according to these stipulations, and they can be built, as this indicates, in all the places where I record my name. It doesn't sound like centralization of worship. One of the standard commentaries from the critical school of thought on Deuteronomy is the commentary by S.R. Driver in the ICC series, International Critical Commentary. This is sort of a standard textbook on Deuteronomy from the Wellhausen approach. He says on page 136, this is a commentary on Deuteronomy, but talking about Exodus 20, verse 24, the verse we just looked at in the covenant code. Exodus 20, 24 following lays no stress upon sacrifice being confined to a single spot, but directs it to be offered upon an altar built in simple fashion of earth or unhewn stone, and attaches to such worship the promise, in whatever place I cause my name to be remembered or commemorated, I will come unto thee and bless thee. The law is meant quite generally. Its intention is to authorize the erection of altars built in the manner prescribed in any part of the land. So the idea is, in Exodus, you find altars can be built anywhere. There's no restriction on that. Whereas, as we'll notice later, in Deuteronomy, the claim is there is centralization of worship, restriction of altars. Well, to get back to our point of JDP progression, you have the Deuteronomic Code, that's pinpointed at 621. The JE Code, that's earlier, Book of the Covenant. It's also usual to refer to Leviticus 17 to 24 as the Holiness Code. Leviticus 17 to 24, the Holiness Code, sometimes referred to with the letter H. The Holiness Code. Now, with that legal material in Leviticus 17 to 24, you have many different opinions as to date, whether it's before or after Deuteronomy. But it's somewhere not too long either before or after Deuteronomy. So you get the Covenant Code, you get Deuteronomy, you have a Holiness Code that's distinct from Deuteronomy, but sometime around the same general time. Finally, there's the priestly code, P. The priestly code, dated during or after the exile. So you'd be a good 100 years or more after the time of Josiah 6:21. That includes Exodus 25 to 31. Exodus 35 to 40, Leviticus 1 to 11, and 25 to 36, and some other smaller sections. But in other words, this priestly code is felt to contain legal material of the P document, which comes from the time of the exile or after, and is found in these scattered sections through the Pentateuch. Now, the relative dating of these codes was an essential feature of Wellhausen's theory. Wellhausen's theory based on this idea of development of religion in Israel, progression in religious development in ancient Israel. And the relative dating of these codes was one of the lines of argumentation that he used, in fact, one of the key lines of argumentation, to demonstrate this development of religion by placing these things in the sequence. Driver, whose commentary I mentioned a few minutes ago, on Romans 14 of his introduction, page 14 in Roman numerals, puts it this way. The different relation in which Deuteronomy thus stands to the three codes of J.E., that being the covenant code, H, holiness code, and C. The different relation in which Deuteronomy stands to the three codes, J.E., H, and C, may be described generally as follows. It is an expansion of the laws in J.E. So here you've got D. It's an expansion of J.E. Follows it, expands it. D is an expansion of J.E. It is in several features parallel to the law of holiness. So an expansion of J.E. parallel to the law of holiness. It contains allusions. He has that italicized. Allusions to laws, not indeed always the same as, but similar to the ceremonial institutions and observances codified in the rest of T. Contains allusions to T, sort of anticipates certain things upon T. Spans J in parallel to this sort of anticipates certain things in T. He says the dependence of Deuteronomy upon J.E. on the one hand and its independence of P on the other, which is thus established for the legislative sections of the book, is maintained in exactly the same manner through the historical section. And he brings a historical argument that complements you to the sequence in legal material. He mentioned another book, didn't he? An important treatment from the Wellhausen tradition, The Origin and History of Hebrew Law, J. M. Powis Smith. The Origin and History of Hebrew Law. Now, I've sort of given you this general framework. Here's how Smith here comments on that framework. Page 39, he says, of the Deuteronomic Code, the chapter is entitled The Deuteronomic Code. It says, the next stage in the development of Hebrew law is represented by the Deuteronomic Code, Deuteronomy chapters 12 to 26. Now, what do you mean by the next stage? Well, page 43, he says, it is, that is the Deuteronomic Code, a revision and expansion of a previously existing code. Deuteronomy is a revision and expansion of a previously existing code. That code was the Covenant Code. The J.E. Code. Deuteronomy is a revision and expansion of that. Comparison's laws dealing with the same subject in the two codes, and you have certain parallels. In other words, certain specific types of legal cases may be covered in Exodus 20 to 23. You'll find them referred to later in Deuteronomy. There's a comparison of laws dealing with the same subject in the two codes will show the differences that have come with the progress of time. At least 200 years passed after the adoption of the Covenant Code, before the Deuteronomic Code was accepted by the people at large. Meantime, much had happened, and so forth. So the differences between Exodus and Deuteronomy are explained by assuming a several century gap between the formulation of the one code and the formulation of the other code. And he takes that framework further with the other codes, although later in that same chapter he discusses centralization of worship. As far as Deuteronomy, then he says the most important of the new laws in Deuteronomy is given the first place in the code of Deuteronomy chapter 12. It is the law requiring that all public worship and sacrifice shall be carried on at the central shrine, the temple in Jerusalem. Centralization of the worship, that becomes the key issue. That's the new thing with Deuteronomy. It says, page 55, the centralization of worship at Jerusalem was the most significant step in the life of the Hebrews. So forth. When it comes to the holiness code, well, first, his conclusion on the Deuteronomy code. The Deuteronomy code is a revision and expansion of the covenant code. It reflects in some degree the progress in social, economic, and religious life of Israel through the centuries which intervened between the two codes. And then he discusses the holiness code, page 70 and following, and applies this to the time of the exile and afterwards. The fact that this code repeats not infrequently laws found in other codes, especially the covenant code and the peace code, is indicative of its independent character. Now I'm talking about the holiness code, that's the peace, which is sort of the intervening period. The priestly code constitutes the larger part of the T document. Like that document, the code is composite. It seems to have been based upon several previous smaller codes. The priestly code is associated with the name of Ezra. It is recorded in Ezra chapter 7 to 10 that Ezra gathered a group of priests and Levites and temple servants in Babylonia, and with them came to Jerusalem, and that there he instituted the reform involving the annulment of all marriages between the Jews and the aliens and so forth. So he links then the P code with the time of Ezra. So you get that general progression. Now that you get into a lot of complex questions and detailed matters and consideration of this whole matter, but once you get the general progression of the theory. Now, it may sound like an impressive theory, particularly you read all the detailed arguments that are developed in some of this literature. But I think that if you read a book like Manley's, and that's the importance of Manley's book, he will give you in here detailed comparisons of these various codes and weigh a lot of these arguments on a detailed basis. Can you really argue that D builds on J.E. for the parallel this and anticipates this? And do the laws bear out the conclusions that have been drawn by Wellhouse and these other people? I think that Manley's book is a good job of showing that the material really doesn't support those assertions and those conclusions. Now, I take far too much time to go into that in detail, but I do want the graduate students to read Manley's The Book of the Law and to then see some of the nature of the material involved. But for our purposes, I think the thing we want to note is that the identification of the Deuteronomic Code with the Book of the Law found in the temple in Josiah's time, and then saying that the demand for centralization of worship was something new in the 7th century B.C., that was characteristic of the Deuteronomic Code, that idea that it was found at this time, it was the book of Deuteronomy, it originated at that time, it demanded centralization of worship, the other code did not. That is central, if not the cornerstone, to the whole Wellhausen hypothesis. Wellhausen says that himself. Well, time has slipped by quick. Let me end with this, and we'll pick up at this point Monday, this week. Wellhausen's classic treatment, Prologomena of the History of Ancient Israel, page 368. He says, I differ from Groth chiefly in this, that I always go back to the centralization of the cultus and deduce from it the particular divergences. My whole position is contained in my first chapter. There I have placed in clear light that which is of such importance for Israel's history, namely, the part taken by the prophetical party in the great metamorphosis of the worship, which by no means came about of itself. My whole position, he says, is contained in my first chapter. And I always go back to the centralization of the cultus, he says. Well, in the first chapter, page 17 and following, in the first paragraph, this book, chapter 1, it says, the oneness of the sanctuary in Israel was not originally recognized, either in fact or in law. It was a slow growth of time. All that precedes the building of the temple, not a trace can be found of any sanctuary of exclusive legitimacy. Multiplicity of sanctuaries was part of the heritage taken over by the Canaanites, the Hebrews, and so forth. So that this idea that centralization of worship is required in Deuteronomy, and that that was a development that arose at the time of Josiah, and that that can be dated at 621, it becomes a fixed point for Wellhausen system, and becomes a very important point. The question we want to ask is that the point of Deuteronomy chapter 12, centralization of worship? And if so, to what extent? And what relation does that have to this whole theory? And is there really a progression between all these codes? And, we'll discuss that further, but pick up then at this point in London. At the end of the last hour, we had gotten to the point where I had tried to give you a general idea of the significance that the date of Deuteronomy and the identification of Deuteronomy with the law book found in the time of Josiah and its origin in that time, the significance which that has for the JEDP literary critical approach to the Pentateuch formulated by Wellhausen, and how important it is for that whole theory to regard Deuteronomy as deriving from the time of Josiah. And at the close of the hour, I mentioned that Wellhausen himself said that his thesis centers around that issue and the connection of Deuteronomy with Josiah, the theory of centralization of worship that he feels is strongly advocated in Deuteronomy, and the fact that he thinks that centralization of worship began in the time of Josiah. Now, I want to pick up then at that point and just give you a couple other brief quotations that emphasize the crucial importance of Deuteronomy for the JEDP theory as a whole. This book, if you're not familiar with it, it's a good book to know about. It's called The Old Testament and Modern Studies, edited by H.H. Rowley. The Old Testament and Modern Studies. which contains a collection of essays that survey Old Testament studies in all the various departments of Old Testament studies, summarizing the approaches that have been taken in this century. So that you have, for example, an article on Old Testament and Archaeology of Palestine by Albright, Pentateuchal Criticism by Professor North, Historical Books by Snipe, Prophetic Literature by Eisfeld, Psalms by A.R. Johnson, Wisdom Literature by Baumgartner, and so on. I won't go through all of it. But what it does is take all those different areas of Old Testament study and give you a summary article that sort of brings up to the time when this was written, which was in the 50s, I believe. 51 was the first edition. But it sort of summarizes research up to that point. So it's a good collection of essays to try to give you a perspective of Old Testament studies of the last generation or so. In one of these articles, written by G.W. Anderson, page 283, the article is on Hebrew religion. G.W. Anderson makes this statement. He talks about Wellhausen's position and its importance and the debate around it. And then he says, at no point has the conflict been keener than in connection with the date and nature of Deuteronomy, the keystone in the Wellhausen system of chronology. Deuteronomy is the keystone in the Wellhausen system of chronology. Anderson says the debate has been keening in connection with that dating of Deuteronomy. And then he adds, if there is serious uncertainty here, the entire structure of the theory is weakened and may collapse. So in other words, if you can seriously question Wellhausen's placing of Deuteronomy at that 6.1 date, according to U.W. Anderson, who largely would adopt the Wellhausen position, you hit at the cornerstone of the theory. And if you can knock that date of Deuteronomy, you really seriously undermine the whole structure. If there's serious uncertainty here, the entire structure of the theory is weakened and may collapse. So the Deuteronomy assumes a very important place in literary critical discussions. H.H. Rowley himself, that was a book edited by Rowley, has written a little book that is really a sort of summary of the JDP position, the growth of the Old Testament story. H.H. Rowley, the growth of the Old Testament. It's sort of an introduction to basic Wellhausen critical position. Page 29. The Code of Deuteronomy is therefore of vital importance in Pentateuchal criticism, since it is primarily by relation to it that the other documents are dated. In other words, that's the one fixed point, 621. Relative dates of the other codes depend on the date we run. Moreover, that code can be more precisely dated with a greater measure of probability than any other. But its reason, of course, is it is in the highest degree probable that the law book on which Josiah's reform was based was the book of Deuteronomy, and that the book first became publicly known at that time. So he also speaks of the significance of dating Deuteronomy, ties it to Josiah's law book. Another standard, probably the standard critical introduction, Otto Eisfeld. The Old Testament and Introduction, Otto Eisfeld. You want the probably most elaborate introduction to the Old Testament in the Wellhausen tradition, this would be it. And this is an English translation of a rather recent German edition, 1965, I think. Yeah. Page 171. He talks about this matter of identifying Deuteronomy with Josiah's law book, dating it in 2621. And then he says, by this suggestion, the precise time of origin of Deuteronomy was established, and a fixed point was discovered by which the age of the other component parts of the Pentateuch could also be determined. De Wet's thesis thus provided Pentateuchal criticism with a point of Archimedes. He has that in quotes. To which it could attach itself in order to deliver it from the bonds of church and synagogue tradition and put in its place an alternative dating of the Pentateuch in its parts. I think it's going to discuss that further, but he speaks of this fixed point as an Archimedean point, so to speak, for the whole structure. So the date of Deuteronomy is of enormous significance in the critical approach, particularly to the Pentateuch, but that has implications for other parts of the Old Testament. Yeah.
Just for our new one, or
yeah, he was he a Greek mathematician and an Archimedean point? How would you make a definition of that? It's a point by which other things are determined. In other words, it's sort of a starting point. And if you can't determine that, you can't determine anything else. That kind of an idea. Maybe so. I'm not sure about that. It will be. Probably somebody else who is more familiar with that than I am.
It's sort of like the compass, the one needle that you push into the paper so you can move the other one around it.
Yeah, all right, that's a good illustration. Something like that. Yeah. So, it's something of that significance. Now, I think that the thing I'd like to draw out of that is this, that it's certainly been of great significance that the whole question of the date of Deuteronomy is by no means a settled and agreed upon matter. Particularly, that is the case today. There's a recent discussions concerning the date of Deuteronomy. The whole topic is in a great deal of flux. And if you take Anderson's statement there of 20 years ago, that if there's serious question about Deuteronomy, this whole structure is in serious jeopardy. Certainly that is something then that is significant. I have been working here with an outline. Let's see. We started yesterday with Roman 1, authorship and date, a survey of critical approaches. Capital A was the theory of the Wellhausen School, which I tried to give to you. And yet, we've just come to the conclusion of that. Capital B will be challenges to the classic Wellhausen position from various directions. Challenges to the classic Wellhausen position from various directions. Capital B. One under that, advocates of a post-exilic date. Now, advocates of a post-exilic date. You notice challenges to the Wellhausen position from various directions. Since the advocacy of the Wellhausen position, the date of Deuteronomy has never been a settled question. There's always been debate, and some have wanted to push it even later. Some, of course, argued to move it back earlier. A few have said we ought to take it for what it claims to be, Mosaic. Others want to go back a little bit earlier, others a little bit further earlier. have been all sorts of opinions, all sorts of positions that have been established. I don't want to take the time, and I don't think this is the place for it anyway, because we want to get into the book itself, to go into detail in all these theories, to study itself. If you read this, the Old Testament and Modern Study, the article on Pentateuchal criticism, you will get somewhat of a survey in that article, chapter 3, Pentateuchal criticism. You will get somewhat of a survey of these critical positions in Thompson's introductory material, more so in Thompson's introductory material than in Craigie's introductory material. If you want a good survey of positions of criticism on Deuteronomy from an evangelical perspective, look in the introductions of Young, Introduction to the Old Testament, but even more so, I think, R.K. Harrison, which is more recent and more detailed. R.K. Harrison's Introduction to the Old Testament. And it's a good survey of the variety of critical positions. I want to here just give you some broad lines, a few names, give you some ideas, directions, not much more than that. But first of all, advocates of apostability. The first name here, small a under one, R.H. Kennett, K-E-N-N-E-T-T. In 1920, wrote a book, Deuteronomy and the Decalogue. He proposed a date for Deuteronomy in the time of Haggai or Zechariah, in other words, a post-exilic date, sometime around 520 or in that general area. I don't think there'd be much point in going into a lot of his arguments.